for our second step panel. So I'm going to take just a second here because I am running a little bit behind, and I got to find my Chris R, who's going to be. Oh, wait a minute. He's not on there. Am I missing something here? I think people are having trouble getting in. I'm sorry. Give us just one second. We'll be right with you. We are early. Oh, there's our second. We're going to have a short break. We'll pass it back over to Damien. Damien's going to play us a little bit of soothing music, spend this time in meditation or whatever you'd like to do, and then we'll be back in just a few minutes. Okay, thanks. Because of some issues we were having, one of our Al-Anon speakers, Kathy, will not be able to join us. So we will just trudge into whatever's coming. So next up, we've got one of my longest friends, someone I love very much, and someone I happen to been walking this with for a while. Chris R. is going to be our next chairperson. So, Chris, if I can find you, here we go. I'm going to unmute you. Chris?
Hi, my name is Chris R., and I am alcoholic from Covington, Kentucky. America, I guess, is appropriate in this instance. Welcome to the Step 2 and 3 panel of the Fellowship of the Spirit Easter Lockdown. I ask that we all observe a few moments silence to reflect upon our primary purpose and the still sick and suffering alcoholic and their family members, both inside and outside the rooms. All right. Thank you so much. It's an honor and a privilege to be a part of this. And thank you again, everybody that's joining us. So we have two speakers now on the panel. Each has been provided with a reading upon which we have asked them to share their experience for about 15 minutes. And then those will be followed by a 30-minute Q&A session. So please send your questions via the chat function on your Zoom display, and we'll attempt to get through as many of those as possible. I assume somebody's managing that because I'm probably not. Our first reading comes from page 47 of the Big Book. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And again, that's chapter 4, We Agnostics, page 47. I would now like to introduce Colleen Kay from Sydney, Australia, to share for 15 minutes.
Colleen, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Colleen, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for asking me to do this. Oh, my God. Just thinking about all the people who are out there, I can feel you. When that music was playing, I just sort of went over to the edge of the bed and just kind of sat there, and I said, God, what would you have me be? Who do you want me to be? What talk do you want me to give? Because I've got the Colleen talk. And the Colleen talk never goes very well because it's highly interested in building Colleen. And we just simply can't have any of that. So step two for me, and remember, this is a long process for me to come to a conceding to my innermost self that self as a power is a failed power. And, you know, you look at my first year, you look at my fifth year, you look at my 10th year, you look at my 17th year, you look at my 20th year. I'm now 31 years sober. You look all along that path, and what you've got is Colleen is not convinced. Okay. I didn't want to not be convinced. I didn't not want to do step three. I didn't not want to do step two. It's just that the power of self was so overwhelmingly powerful. And as Anthony DeMello, if you've ever read Way to Love, if you're trying to get unsnagged from self, I would highly recommend it. It's one of my go-to books. Talks about the programming of society is so strong and so powerful. It's the rapids that I'm trying to swim against, because I thought money, property, prestige, building self, all of those things was what I had to have in order for me to be okay. I don't know where along the way in my alcoholism, my brain got configured so that I really believed I absolutely had to get it together on the outside. And when it talks about driven, oh my God, was I driven. So I would go to your AA meetings when I would skid into some difficulties with self-will run riot. I would go skidding into the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and then I'd hear something and I would be, ah. And every little piece along the way that I heard was, and self is a failed power, and self is a failed power. And they said things like, I think I was 4 years sober at the time. If you're still stealing things from work, e.g. pens, paper, long distance telephone calls, if you're still weaseling around like that, it's because you don't trust this power that you're going to have enough. So if I look at my dishonesty along the way, my dishonesty was always based on Colleen's got to grab and grip and grind in order to get what Colleen thinks she needs to be okay. And I remember my sponsor saying to me at one point, it's something that I was devastated and disappointed about that I wasn't getting. And it was all behind good motives of, but this is my dream. But this is my heart's desire. This is what I've thought about since I was a little girl. All that kind of thing is so dangerous because it's so sweetly wrapped up in pink. It's so sweetly wrapped up in such a con package. I buy the con. It's me that believes the delusion, right? That my motives are good just because they're wrapped up in their Colleen's hopes and dreams. And I remember my sponsor saying to me, she said, but what if it's not what God wants you to have? And my first thought was, I don't care. I want it. That was my first thought. And my sponsors started to teach me that my first thought couldn't be trusted, that it was my first thought that needed to be taken into the corrective measures in the evening review. See, an entire chunk for me of the step two, and remember, it's building all along. It'll continue to build for me for the next quarter of a century. It's all connected to what I'm doing to cultivate that God consciousness. And I mean, I started out, it talks about, you know, effective spiritual structure can be built. If I look at Colleen's recovery, easily in the first 5 years, my spiritual structure was based on fakeness, really. I mean, I would sit there and do the third step prayer and thine, thou, thine, whatever. Okay, fine. But I would only be cornered into that along the way, because my sponsor would constantly drag me back. And the story I'd always tell myself is, she takes this stuff just a little bit too seriously. I need to get a non-fundamentalist AA sponsor. Stuff way too seriously. And that's a really important thought for an alcoholic to have a look at. In fact, I would encourage anybody, throw that into your evening review. What are the cynical thoughts regarding Alcoholics Anonymous? Because we got plenty of them and we build cases. I had a sponsee last week, 10 years sober. She quit AA and I laughed my head off. And I was like, okay, so she left all the WhatsApp groups. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. But like, there's no other restaurant. There will be no other food that will be served to you. Like, good luck with that. And when she was saying, she came back. So it's really important for me to know that when I'm in negativity and when I'm in cynicism, I'm in self. And that is so dangerous. It's dangerous because it sets me up for a drink and I don't even realize it. So what are the things that I did along the way? Look, I broke every single moral law that was on offer out there. I mean, I was sleeping with the married man. I was ending up with $24,000 credit card debt. I was fired from 19 jobs. I was filled with rage and resentment towards my alcoholic father, who was powerless over his illness. But you see, the God consciousness in Colleen had not caught up to understanding that yet. So why did I continue to suffer behind those ideas in my first 5 to 10 years? Well, the truth of the matter is, looking back, and this isn't about guilt for anybody, but I really was not working a hard enough Alcoholics Anonymous program. I really could have spared myself probably the $24,000 credit card debt, probably the panic attack, hospital visits, 3 of them. I could have spared myself, I believe, all of that stuff or not, but this is my delusional theory, that I could have spared myself that if I really had taken very seriously what this step 3 is trying to teach me. And, you know, when you go, there's the first time you do the step 3, and if you're really graced and blessed with an amazing sponsor, you really do surrender and concede. I didn't. I did that in a very shallow and superficial way. But when I did it in a deeper way, which was to really sit with that page 60 at the bottom where it talks about, am I convinced that a life based on self can hardly be a success? When I really take a look at that, how many times have I cried and been in the fetal position and been convinced and then still go out and do it all? So I'm still on 61. I'm using all the tools, you know, kind, sweet, adorable, charming, wonderful, you know, or she's mean, egotistical, selfish, and all those things, right? But the show had to look a certain way. And the truth of the matter is that I was in a fury that the show didn't look a certain way. What I didn't realize was that the ego had its structure built of what it demanded. These are the demands of what it demanded to be okay. And that's why on a Sunday afternoon, you can be having lunch or dinner with your family and you're in negativity and cynicism. And what is this, what it's about? Is this what sobriety is? Seriously? And you're like judging all the family members and you're trolling back to the past and all the mistakes they've made, or worried about the future, what I'm not going to have to make me be okay. That's to be obsessed with the show and the show needing to be a certain way. So how can I get deep down into the discipline of the conscious contact with this power? Because it tells me it's my only hope, right? And so, you know, what I started to do was I started to work with maybe 1 hour of the day, just 1 hour, where it's the Emma Fox mental diet. As though a cat watches a mouse, I was watching for these thoughts. I was watching for the resentment. I was watching for the broken guilt. You know how that is? Somebody loses their wallet and you feel like you've stolen it. It's just like, well, I didn't steal it, but why am I feeling that? Why am I having a reaction that I believe I've stolen? What is that? And that's all the old guilt, shame when I did steal the wallet. And why is it still there? Why is it still in the submarine? Why do I still have those missiles within me? I've got to look at them. And the reason I didn't look at them was because I didn't want to feel it. I didn't want to feel what it looked like to see Colleen as a liar, cheat, and thief, to see me. And my sponsor said, you know, the feeling's probably going to last about half an hour, or maybe it lasts a day, or maybe it lasts 2 days, but then you get freedom for 20 years. 2 days of suffering, 20 years of freedom. I'm an odds-on player. Okay, I'll check it out. And I started to go into it and start really looking at this stuff. And, you know, step three is having me look at my my rage about the show. And for me, what my rage about the show was, is that I was so attached to what you all thought of me. I was so in bondage to the external world. And I said to God, I said, can you wake me up in this area of self-centered fear? Because it's self-centered fear. And I started for 1 hour each day, cat watches a mouse. All right, right now, God revealed to me what this self-centered fear looks like. Or if I'm looking at, you know, my attachment to money, property, prestige. Okay, reveal that to me once a week, 1 hour, and writing down what those recurrent thoughts are or observing it all. And what I started to see was, I started to see that everything I did was so that you would affirm me. Everything I did was so that you would be able to tell me that I was somehow valuable, that I was somehow worth something. Now, I started to see it in the way I walked. I started to see it in the way I got out of my car. I even caught it this morning when I went from the window here. As soon as I was aware I was in the camera zone, I could feel it within me. So that self is on this journey with me, okay? That level of whatever that the higher power has not taken from me, right? That brokenness, it's with me. And what I now see is that that's what contributes to my light. Do I like the suffering of it? Absolutely not. But has the power removed that in seven when I offered it up? A percentage of it has been removed, enough for me to be able to be interested in working the program. Because each time I step into that great reality, and anybody who has sort of walked down the street and all of a sudden the shoulders are relaxed, all of a sudden, and somebody will walk by, a stranger, and you feel love in your heart for them, and you're like, what's that? And that's that God essence stuff. You know, you'll be talking to somebody and they'll be being an absolute moron, and they'll be, you know, abusive with their language or whatever. And like, you know, you're at the shops and you see this person, they go to turn that rage on you, and to be there as the God presence and to just look at them and understand, because I know what it feels like to want to drive somebody over with an automobile, right? And that person's in that moment, and I'm not, and I can feel the holding space for that stuff. I can see. And for me, that's the God stuff. When I am, you know, I have a 21-year-old, when I can see he's being driven by, I want this, I want that, I want this. I can see it and I can be useful. But more importantly, I think part of the God stuff for me, the consciousness that, what's it called? It's called universal mind. The universal mind is also about the sixth sense. So in that moment, the sixth sense will go, don't say anything, just listen, right? That's a miracle for me, because I'm queen of unsolicited advice. I'm queen of, I know. I can tell you, I have the answer to that. I have the answer to that. But this, you know, Bill Wilson calls it the czar of the heavens. A lot of people don't like that. I kind of like that. I like the idea that there is, I think Henry Thoreau talked about the oversoul, that there is this great universal mind, infinite love, power that's very interested in helping Colleen. And I remember this guy once said to me, do you know that God has counted every hair on your head and intimately knows Colleen? And that was so moving to me, because I just, there was a cynical part of me that just thought, what could be more naive and stupid than the religious people who believe in this God? And oh yeah, isn't that cute? God's seen your hair on your head. But it isn't like that. It's that I can feel sometimes that I'm highly interested in not operating from self. And the reason why I don't want to operate from self is because it just feels wrong. You know that, you know, anybody who's done double digit sobriety is having the affair or stolen the money or doing dishonest stuff. I've done it all, by the way. No, honey, I've been faithful to you. So I've been faithful to one man this whole time, which is a miracle. But anybody who's done that or is in that right now, I can see that that was the road I had to walk in order to feel what it's like to lead a life based on self. And that brokenness and that experience, I bring the table for others. And this higher power is so interested in me coming to the table for others. And that's why I think I was able to walk through all that like insane pain and suffering, you know, crawling to the psychiatrist and the psychiatrist being really, really simple and just going, the reason you had the panic attack was because you were having the affair. The reason you had the panic attack was because you stole the money. And I was being brought back to a life based on self. And I had no clue this was going on. You know, you come to AA, it's like, what's going on here? Oh my God. And then as time goes on, you realize that unless you take this seriously, there's going to be suffering. And that happy, joyous, and free exists over here in this God consciousness stuff. But what am I doing to cultivate it? What is my morning step 11 practice? What is my evening review? And I turn that into very, very different things. Sometimes now I'll see something during the day. Let's say it's self-violence, and it can be self-violence with us. Let's say it's self-violence. That whole evening review will be a dialogue with God and me about the self-violence I'll have been doing all day. What was told to me on the feedback for that in the corrective measures was the reason I'm doing those things is because there's a perceived benefit. And what's the perceived benefit? The perceived benefit is we're still talking about Colleen, because the St. Francis prayer talks about self-forgetfulness. I'm not very good at that. I don't know if anybody else is, but I'm not very good about that. I'm going to share one more thing, and then I think my time's up. Is somebody going to wave for my 1 minute mark or something? Oh, you'll wave for my, I got 1 minute. Okay. This last thing. So about 6 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with motor neuron disease. Now, my mother was like the soulmate of my lifetime. She was just my cherished everything. And I simply couldn't believe that such a horrible disease, such as Lou Gehrig's disease, was what the card that we got given. And so I called actually Mike Lorenz, who's going to be speaking soon. And he gave me a prayer. And the prayer was, I have unforeseen strength and a calm spirit. And I said, Mike, I don't know how I'm going to be able to pull that off. I can't pull that off. This God, how could this God give Lou Gehrig's disease to my mother, who never did anything, ever broke any of these self-will run riot laws in her life? This is completely wrong. This is insane. And I just kept saying the prayer and saying the prayer and saying the prayer. And I begged God to take her away immediately. I did not want to walk through that death. I walked through that death with her. And what I saw in that walk was so much light pour into her and the power to carry her to the point where I wanted what she had. I'll leave it at that. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Colleen. Thank you so much. And again, it's an honor to be here.